country's constitution. Trump says that the United States will not stand by as Venezuela crumbles. He says that the Maduro regime imposes its constituent assembly on July 30th. The United States will take strong action. More on these stories at townhall.com.
As Californians, we are fortunate to live in such a rich agricultural state. California agriculture generates roughly $37.5 billion annually, more than any other state. Orchard Nutrition Center believes that buying local not only supports North State agriculture, but decreases the amount of time between harvest to your family's table, resulting in the freshest, most nutritious meat and produce available. Hat Creek Grown is one of the largest providers of grass-fed beef in California and is a featured vendor of Orchard Nutrition Center. Grass-fed beef has about one-half to one-third the amount of fat than grain-fed beef. It is lower in calories and can also lower LDL cholesterol levels. Hat Creek Grown is family-owned with its roots dating back to 1903. Delicious, local, natural. Hat Creek Grown at Orchard Nutrition Center, 221 Locust Street in Redding. Now open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week to better serve your family. Orchard Nutrition Center.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Allworth, and this is my other host.
Other host. I'm moving up here.
Yeah, well, you know, this is my, I don't know.
I feel like other host is
life
greater
partner.
Than co-host.
No, is that going too far?
Walk it back. Walk it back.
Yeah, roll that in. I don't remember approving that. Well, this is our first show where we have been invited into the Para-X Paranormal Radio family. So this show is going to be going out there, and we thank you for letting us into your family, and thanks for coming to ours. And we're going to start out with some very sad news. Anybody who slightly knows me, listens to the show, has listened to bands. I played in bands.
Has bumped into you in the street in the past 24 years.
Seen me on my soapbox. Knows that I love horror movies.
Yes.
I love them. Probably on an unhealthy level. I think I'm chasing some fantasy of how I felt when I was 12 when I first watched something cool and how it made me feel awesome. And so now I watch like... God, I must watch like 15 terrible movies before I watch one that's even slightly good. And then, and then like one in 100, I get that feeling again. I'm all, this is it. It's happening. You know.
So it's pathological.
There's something wrong with me, yeah.
Yeah.
But one thing that came across my desk today is that George Romero died yesterday.
Yeah. And there doesn't have to be anything wrong with you to think that that's sad.
Yeah, and I wonder how many people out there know who George Romero is. George Romero was a filmmaker who made Night of the Living Dead in 1968. And it was a black and white movie, although 1968 is too late for black and white movies, so it was actually shot on 16mm black and white film to keep it cheap. Mm-hmm. Because back when movies were made on film, a big part of the budget was development. Developing the film was literally thousands of dollars. You know, I saw this Chris Rock stand-up, and he was talking about the Blair Witch Project. And he's all, can you believe that they made that movie for $36,000? My only question is, where'd the other $35,000 go? You know, and but George Romero, you know, he without George Romero, without two people, this zombie world that we live in that's so obsessed with zombie, this
world
there would
War
be
Z, Walking Dead, et
right?
Cetera,
none
et
of that would exist without George Romero and also Richard Matheson. So prior to George Romero, see Richard Matheson. Let's start at the beginning. We got time. Richard Matheson wrote a book called I Am Legend, which was about the planet Earth being taken over by vampires, and there's only one guy left.
Right.
And so George Romero took this idea and made a movie, Night of the Living Dead, where the world was taken over by zombies.
Yeah.
And prior to that, we really had like Bela Lugosi, White Zombie, Revolt of the Zombies. We had movies that were, you know, at best, the baddie had like eight zombies who were going
right.
around.
The idea of, you know, the zombie pandemic.
Right. The infectious zombie
was really
like
created
that.
by George Romero.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's very sad to me because he also is one of my idols. You know, he really sort of personified what I want with my life. If I could do anything with my life, I would make low budget horror films and I would be happy.
I believe you.
And he was one of those guys, and there's a lot of them in the horror community, you know, guys who scraped their way up from the bottom. You know, they didn't go to big fancy film schools or anything like that. They got there from the school of hard knocks and
just red and
that was definitely
a bunch of extras.
Yeah, you know, half the people in the movie are their family, you know, and
yeah.
But you know, we also I guess got to throw it to George, because that movie ended up being very popular and people were very taken aback. This was 1968. People were very taken aback by Ben, the lead of his movie. The lead character in his movie was black. And he spent the movie protecting a white woman, which, you know, nowadays, who cares? Well, some people care, but I don't want to deal with that. In 1968, this was a big deal, and it was very shocking. And for him to bank his future on this and so on and so forth, you know, it was really quite impressive, you know, and quite cool. And there's a little social commentary about what happens at the end, but I don't want to give it away for those of you who have not seen it.
I feel like there's a statute of limitations on spoilers from 1968.
Yeah.
You know, it expires after 30 or 40
years.
Well,
67 is expired, but not 68 yet. And, you know, so it was very moving for me when I found out that George Romero died. I have to admit, I kind of teared up a little bit at my desk.
That is perfectly reasonable.
Is that normal? Is this what people are doing?
But right as now? I was saying earlier in the day, I think we can, you know, rest happy knowing that George Romero probably isn't dead.
Right.
He's probably shambling around, passing on his gift of filmmaking through infectious bites.
He's going to out-unlive all of us.
Exactly.
All right, well, back to business. We have a guest tonight, MJ Benias. He is a ufologist, and he kind of is coming at this from a different angle. His angle is much more of a sociological and philosophical one, which is not a common one. So he's definitely interested in why people think what they think and how they get there. And it should be a really interesting show, so stick around. You are listening to Radio Wasteland. We'll be right back with our guest, MJ Benias.
Your diamond hands will be stacked with roses. And wind and some people of the past, I'll call you thin just when the moon sings. And place your face in stone upon a star and grip in the arms of the changeless man. We'll dance our lives away in the bones of Mars. You talk about day, about nighttime, when monsters call out the names of men. Bob Dylan knows, and I bet Alan Freed did. There are things in night that are better not.
This is Carl in the Bot, and there is only one place you will find a new Sleep Number dual temp layer bed. That's right, Sleep Number in Reading. Be sure to go in and see them in a Target shopping center next to the Vitamin Shop. My Sleep Number is 40, and I feel great.
Right now they're making room, so go in and receive huge savings on all Sleep Number memory foam and I-Series bed sets. My Sleep Number is 55. Go find yours today. Sleep Number in the Target Center next to the Vitamin Shop. Hi, this is Linda Bott. Like many working women, I have a hectic schedule. My daily radio show, stage performances, and time with Carl leave almost no time to focus on myself. And I know a lot of us are in that same situation. We need me time to maintain mind, body, and spirit. And that's where Wellgate Sports Club really shines. I love the aquatic training program at Wellgate Sports Club. Kathleen Cowling's Aqua Aerobics focuses on cardiac training through water resistance and buoyancy that features safe, low-impact movements. Wellgate Sports Club's saltwater pool is a unique way to get back to my body, feeling muscle groups grow stronger. Kathleen at Wellgate Sports Club helped me to find my new limits, and they can help you too. Call Wellgate Sports Club today at 768-1205, or you can check out schedule information online at wellgatesportsclub.com. At Wellgate, self-care is the best form of health care. Wellgate Sports Club, Eureka Way at Court in Reading.
Join Aaron Ryan, Bill Cundiff, and Bob Martin for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon till 2. Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media soundbites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join us this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. And we welcome your suggestions for future topics and guests at wethepeopleradio.us. We the People, now on Sundays from noon till 2 on AM 1460 KCNR.
What shall we do about them?
Analog living in a digital world. Every week on Boomer Tech Radio, we offer up the latest tech news you can use. Hi, it's Bob Belongi. It's even easier to listen to the show now that we're on iTunes. You'll find our archives and articles at BoomerTechRadio.com, and the show is streamed live at KCNR1460.com. We review the latest goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and make sure you are up to date on the latest tech trends. Boomer Tech Radio, Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. on KCNR 1460, and now available as a podcast on iTunes.
Her mommy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go.
Welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest, MJ Benias. Do we have you there with us, MJ?
How's it going?
Not bad. Are you an MJ or are you Michael when I'm talking to you?
MJ is good.
MJ is good. You know, I've often, you know, my name is Chauncey Haworth and my middle name is Charles, and I've often decided that if I was ever going to be a famous author, I would be C. Charles Haworth, because it, you know.
I think it's kind of the route I went. I think MJ sounds a little more mysterious and it sounds a little more dignified.
Sorry to have given away the Michael then.
No, it's fine. Most people call me Mike, so.
You're here talking to me and my co-host here, Sean.
Yep.
And I've been pretty excited about having you on the show because of your educational background and your outlook coming at the subject of ufology, which, you know, is a very common subject, doing this radio show. You know,
we've talked to several.
I end up having to stagger my ufologist guests because they are so numerous. But you really seem to be coming from a different angle. But before we get into that, I always like to ask the guests, you know, how exactly did you get started in this?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm one of those few people in sort of the UFO world that's never had an experience with sort of anything paranormal or anything strange or anything. Like, I'm just sort of, you know, a normal person, I guess you could say, who's just kind of lived a normal life and has been pretty humdrum. I guess it just sort of started. My academic background is in critical theory, and I studied primarily sort of subcultures, and I've really enjoyed looking at sort of how subcultures influence society. And UFO subculture is sort of this very interesting version of sort of the edges of mainstream culture, I suppose. And because, you know, when you really look at people who believe in UFOs, like 50% of, like, the United States of America believes in UFOs.
Really?
So it's sort of this subculture that kind of ties into the mainstream a little bit. And I always, as a kid growing up, loved sort of, you know, the X-Files and the Outer Limits and the Twilight Zone and all that stuff. So, you know, it sort of tied in nicely with sort of interests and that I had as a kid growing up. And it just kind of took off, and I really got into it. And I became a field investigator with MUFON, and just sort of became a UFO person, I suppose. And that's kind of how it's been. It's been a few years of this, and I'm loving every second of it. So, that's kind of how it all started. It's just a mix between childhood enjoyment and childhood love and just sort of academic background.
Yeah, well, I think we're somewhat kindred spirits in that regard, because I personally have never had an experience myself either. You know, I've had maybe coincidences here and there where I go, ooh, did I just have one? But I never had one where
yeah.
I, you know, straight up said, I just had one of those things. And I really got into this because for the same, you know, a love of science fiction, a love of horror films. And then it led me to go like, oh, man, there's some people out there that believe in this stuff. And I want to know, is this real? Is this out there, you know?
And that's definitely what it is, right? It's sort of the mystery, right? It's one of those few things in life anymore that still has mystery to it, you know? There's you know, as technology develops, as you know, our society becomes more, I guess, intelligent, let's say, and more civilized, quote unquote, there's very few mysteries left. We're kind of decoding the universe, and UFOs are one of those things that just, for some reason, are still kind of, you know, in this mysterious kind of nebulous realm of, is it real, is it not real?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And this world is really kind of forgotten about the mystery. It's like nowadays you'll see a thriller movie or something like that, and in the end it's like, oh my god, it was the Vicar. But it's like, but they didn't really leave you any breadcrumbs along the way, you know. It's just a twist ending, you know. But in the case of ufology and paranormal in general, I really feel like in a lot of these cases there are breadcrumbs.
Oh, I agree. I think we have a lot of breadcrumbs. I think that's the interesting thing about sort of the UFO problem or the UFO question, whatever you want to call it, is we have an inordinate amount of breadcrumbs. We have so many breadcrumbs, we don't know what to do with them all.
That's one that leaps to mind, I guess.
And that's the problem.
What'd you say, Sean?
What's a breadcrumb that leaps to mind, just off the top of your
head? Yeah, what would you say is like maybe the one of those clues that you...
That's hard to ignore.
That's hard to ignore. That's a good point, yes.
Yeah, you know, UFOs are, you know, they're one of those rare kind of paranormal things, metaphysical things, I suppose, that leave sort of physical pieces of evidence lying around, right? Not necessarily kind of like pieces of metal or whatever, which they do sometimes, but ultimately more so like, especially radar hits and sort of eyewitness accounts, that are sort of fairly legitimate and fairly, you know, intelligent, and they're not just kind of, you know, anecdotal. There's a lot of evidence. One of my favorite UFO cases is the Alderney UFO incident, which happened around 2007, I believe. And, you know, they had multiple pilot sightings. They had a plane full of witnesses. They had radar evidence. Like, it was one of those cases that you have a whole bunch of breadcrumbs lying around. And for some reason, nobody sort of investigated those breadcrumbs beyond kind of, you know, a few UFO I guess, UFO researchers who sort of looked at it, but it kind of went cold a little bit. And I think it's one of those cases that definitely needs to be revisited because you have this huge amount of evidence to support it. That something mysterious definitely happened. Something odd happened. It wasn't just sort of a prosaic event, but rather something sort of different. So if you want to Google that, it's the 2007 Alderney UFO incident. A terrific case out of England. And like I said, plenty of breadcrumbs lying around, radar, multiple witnesses, you know, multiple pilots checking up on each other's sort of sightings and confirming them. So that's definitely one of them.
Yeah, it's when it comes to cases like that where there's so much around and so much to be researched, it really does lead me to believe that there is some sort of conspiracy that is suppressing this knowledge or consciously belittling it. I think is there the way that they go, you know, because I'd like to think like scientists are like on board for science. They want to know about science. You know, I'm very pragmatic when it comes to science. I love science. I love Neil deGrasse Tyson. I love this stuff. But when it comes to some of these things, and you know, for me, the one that always stands out is like Roswell. You know, they come out and they say, we got a UFO. And then the next day they're all, whoops, it was a weather balloon. How do you make that mistake?
Yeah,
you know? And it's like, and so I'm wondering like how much, I don't know, you know, it just leads me to wonder, I guess, as you're doing.
You know, I have a love-hate relationship with Roswell. I got to be honest. It's one of those cases that I think kind of needs to be put to bed already. And I think we need to move on. I think there's so many better cases out there. And unfortunately, Roswell has become sort of, for some reason, this linchpin case within sort of the UFO discourse, right? Like, Roswell is, I don't know, Roswell is the only sort of UFO case that everyone, even people outside of sort of the UFO world, know about. You can go to anyone on the street and ask them, like, do you know what Roswell is? And they would probably have some inclination of like, oh yeah, yeah, it has to do with aliens or something, right?
Right.
I think they would quicken their pace and walk away from you.
Yeah, they might throw the crap out of the street. But, you know, ultimately, you know, you have this case, and I don't know, like I said, I have a love-hate relationship with Roswell. I think that too many people have hung their sort of hats upon it, and there's not much there. There's not much going on at Roswell when it comes to sort of physical evidence or evidence beyond just sort of witness testimony, right? There's like I said, there's dozens and dozens of other cases that have not only witness testimony, but they have like radar tracks, or they have physical evidence such as like landing trace evidence. And Roswell just doesn't have this. And Roswell's really been hyped to something sort of beyond what it is, which is literally it was potentially like a flub, like, you know, some guy, some sergeant, right, who like said, yeah, yeah, it's a flying saucer, and then all of a sudden, you know, his superior is like, yo, bro, man, what are you doing?
Totally.
It was a balloon.
You know you're not supposed to talk to the media.
Yeah, yeah. What did you do? Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I'm not a big expert on Roswell, but I have to be honest, I've read enough about it that I find it lacking a little bit when it comes to, you know, evidence that is sort of supportable.
You're
in any kind of real sense. But
there's definitely been better things since with technological evidence and so on and so forth.
Oh, for sure. For sure. But Roswell's become a thing. I gotta be honest. It's become,
it is the granddaddy.
I wrote an article about this where I sort of called Roswell this hyper real sort of event. You know, you can't separate the reality of Roswell and the mythology of Roswell, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't necessarily matter anymore what happened at Roswell. It doesn't matter at all. Like, the reality of the situation is moot. Now it all kind of hinges upon the myth of Roswell, the kind of the stories that make it up. And that's really what's important to Roswell. That's what's important to, I think, maybe people who sort of believe in it or people who follow it or people who try to sort of reopen that case. It's the mythology that's important to them when it comes to Roswell, not sort of the reality of the situation. But, you know, that's enough throwing rocks at Roswell. I'm going to get a lot of hate mail after this one.
That's all right. No such thing as bad publicity. Well, we're coming up on our break. When we come back, we'll have more of our guest, MJ Benias. You are listening to Radio Wasteland.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Reading weather is heating up again, and that means air conditioning in your car or truck is not optional. I trust St. John's Automotive on Eureka Way to do the job right with one-stop service for my car. They are family-owned, with fair prices, outstanding work, and great customer service. They do it all. Call St. John's Automotive 2040 Eureka Way at 605-4889. That's 605-4889.
When you're looking to add a pet to your family, Haven Humane Society is a place to start. Hi, this is Mark from Haven to tell you that shelter pets make the best pets. With kittens, puppies, dogs, cats, bunnies, guinea pigs, hamsters, snakes, birds, and more, Haven has a pet that is the right fit for your family. We also provide education, training, spaying and neutering, dog licensing, and so much more. If you're looking for a way to help, our amazing volunteers have fun with the animals while helping us to save lives. For more information, call 241-1653 or visit havenhumane.org. Like us on Facebook and follow our progress as we work towards a day with no more homeless pets in the North State.
Simpson University will prepare you to be a teacher in just 12 months. Start summer, fall, or spring and fill the need for the next generation of educators. Many Simpson students have landed teaching jobs before completing their credential program. We'll show you how you can accomplish this and receive an instructional iPad too. Simpson University offers scholarships, grants, and financial aid to help you achieve your educational goals. Call 1-888-9-SIMPSON or go online to simpsonu.edu/credential for more details.
Holiday Harbor, we've got it all for you. But we're more than just great houseboats. We have the vacation you have been looking for without the drive or airport hassle. Fishing boats, patio boats, 47-foot party cruisers, wakeboards, jet skis, and stand-up paddle boards. If it floats or you can pull it behind a boat, we probably have it for your enjoyment. Visit Holiday Harbor, exit 695 of Interstate 5, or go to lakeshasta.com. Holiday Harbor, your own vacation in town.
Welcome back to Radio Wasteland with our guest, MJ Benias. MJ, you know, in internet stalking you, which I guess is totally research. Socially acceptable.
We call it research.
It's called research now. Is the socially acceptable way about finding out about a person. You know, I really kind of appreciated that you were kind of asking a question. I felt that you were asking a question. I might be reading too much into this, that I've often asked myself, and that is, well, I don't know if it's the question, but acknowledging that there are two camps of UFO researchers and fans. There is the one camp of the nuts and bolts researcher, the hard science guy, and then there is the camp who is more spiritual and connecting through through, I'm not entirely sure what, you know, and we've had a few of them on the show. You know, when I first found out about these sort of spiritual ufologists, you know, I automatically was kind of, you know, raised an eyebrow to it. But after I've had a couple on the show, you know, it's really kind of amazing. You know, have you found that there's more one than the other? I feel like the spiritual side is growing.
You know, it's interesting. I think the spiritual side, it's been around for a long time. Like, I mean, it's been like decades and decades, but I think ultimately it might be growing more amongst sort of, I guess, serious UFO researchers, only because the nuts and bolts sort of hypothesis, like nothing's really come of it, right? You know, really when we think about the UFO question sort of from a bird's eye view, right? Like a broad, big scale. It's been sort of a nuts and bolts question longer than it's been a spiritual question. Not really by much, maybe by a decade or so, but ultimately it sort of started out as this idea that, you know, it's sort of alien beings like you and I from another planet, and they fly around in sort of metallic ships, and they come here and they sort of interact with our world. The problem with that is ultimately then we should have sort of some baseline evidence that we can then study. I mean, if they're like you and I, they're intelligent, they might be sort of more intelligent, but ultimately they're intelligent like you and I, there should sort of be something we can study. There should be, they should have sort of, they should follow maybe patterns of behavior, or they should, you know, leave behind sort of objects that we can kind of look at. Unfortunately, you know, in the UFO world, this you know, never happens, right? There's no object that we can sort of study objectively that we can't, like, under laboratory conditions, for example. So a lot of, I think, especially today, contemporary sort of UFO researchers, I think they're starting to realize that maybe this nuts and bolts idea isn't sort of all it seems to be. Maybe whatever is happening, whatever sort of this UFO is, maybe it's something that is not necessarily physical like you and I are physical. It's not physical like the coffee cup in front of you is physical, for example. It's something that exists sort of in a different state than you and I exist. So I think it's kind of gaining ground a little bit. And whether we want to call it spiritual or mystical, or whether we just want to call it, you know, interdimensional, or whether we want to call it sort of an aspect of like universal consciousness, and there's this intelligence that's kind of able to negotiate that consciousness or whatever. You know, I agree with you. I think it is kind of growing in popularity.
Well, yeah, no, I think that there's a lot of nuts and bolts guys who are still entertaining the possibility of interdimensional, you know, and that these spiritual, you know, sort of mental communications to the Crab Nebula and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, it starts to get very, very abstract. You know, I've had a few guests on here. I'm not going to put any names down because I don't mean anything by it. They came on here and they started talking a bunch of crazy talk, and I'm just all, this guy is absolutely crazy. But then I drill him, and then I talk to him, and then I research him. And, you know, everything that he was saying was totally consistent. He fully, fully, fully believed in those things that he was talking about, to the point where it was, like, really kind of shockingly consistent. You would expect people to flub, to stumble, to, you know, but he had a whole existence based around, I mean, we're talking massive amounts of texts that he had written about it, and he could cite them as being, you know, he fully believed it. It's, I guess, what I'm getting at.
Right. And you know, that kind of, you kind of bring up that word, right? Belief, right? Which is huge. And like the UFO field is no different than sort of any other academic field, in that you have a lot of infighting between, like, members of the community, right?
I'm noticing that.
You know, it doesn't matter whether you're in chemistry or physics, or whether you're in you know, English literature, or whether you're in philosophy. You have academics who disagree with one another, and they literally hate each other, and they, like, you know, send nasty emails to one another, or Facebook messages, and you have this same sort of occurrence within UFO culture, right? Yeah. You have these sort of UFO experts, some of whom are sort of much more scientific, and they look at these sort of people he referred to as crazy as being just that, and they're, you know, they're sullying the name of ufology, right? We're trying to do serious studies here, and you guys are talking about, you know, channeling some alien from, like you said, the Crab Nebula, or from, you know, from, you know, Zeta Reticuli or something, right? Like, these ridiculous claims that are totally unsubstantiated, right? There's no way to prove them. But the, you know, sort of the mystical side, right, the spiritualist kind of UFO people would look at the scientific researchers, the scientific ufologists, and be like, you know, that's great, you can take shots at us, but I gotta be honest, you've been doing this for 70 years and you've been proving the damn thing.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
you know,
they're both right.
What are you doing? like, you know, like it doesn't take 70 years to figure something out, you know, like, so, you know, they have a half decent claim as well, I gotta be honest.
Oh, I agree.
You know, like, what are the more scientifically minded sort of ufologists doing with this evidence that they've collected that, you know, suggests UFOs are real or not real, but UFOs sort of are potentially intelligently controlled, you know, spacecraft or whatever. So, you know, it kind of, the razor cuts both ways, right?
Yeah, I definitely agree.
And you know, the fact that I've come, you know, like I'm from a sort of a more philosophical background and my entry into the UFO world is more philosophical than it is sort of anything else. I can kind of exist in all these camps, right? Like I can make spiritual arguments and I can make scientific arguments because, you know, it's philosophy and, you know, we just say whatever the hell we want and it's great. You know, I can kind of float between all these worlds. And that's kind of, I think, maybe my job a little bit. I kind of like poking holes in kind of other people's work and theories a little bit because sometimes you need that person. Kind of be critical.
So yeah, explain to us a little bit of this angle that you're coming from.
Sure.
With trying to separate those things.
Sure.
Or
yeah.
Trying to bring them together, maybe.
Well, you know, the UFO world, like we've sort of been talking about, is full of people who are in the scientific field and people who are in the spiritual field, that more mystical field. And there's not a lot of people in the UFO world who sort of do, you know, philosophy in a traditional sense or critical theory or culture studies. I guess where there's like, I can maybe count on one hand, sort of other people who are like me. But, you know, ultimately what I want to do is my project, I suppose, is to tie in sort of human philosophy and human cultural theory into the UFO question. I want to start looking at the UFO question from this angle. One, because very few people have done it. And very few people have done it from kind of within the UFO world. There's a lot of philosophers out there who have talked about extraterrestrial life. There's a lot of scientists out there who have talked about extraterrestrial life. That's not what I mean. That's not what I do. You know, I was a UFO sort of investigator with MUFON. You know, I've met with witnesses, I've researched cases, I've investigated cases. So I kind of want to attack the UFO question sort of internally, with sort of philosophy and with theory. So that's kind of where I do it. And my blog is kind of trying to piece this together. It's called Terra Obscura. And I sort of try to build up, I don't know, like studying the culture of UFOs, studying the philosophy of UFOs.
The culture.
Why do we believe what we believe?
The culture and the philosophy of humans and how they view it, not the culture and philosophy of extraterrestrials.
Thank you very much, yeah, for clearing that up. Yeah, I agree. I don't know the culture and philosophy of sort of extraterrestrials. Yeah,
right.
You're right. Thank you. Yeah, the culture and philosophy, I guess, of the UFO culture, of the people who believe in UFOs, or the people who research UFOs, or the skeptics who sort of try to debunk UFOs, right? This is sort of all cultural practice that I try to sort of understand, and I try to kind of, I guess, you know, write about and piece together and sort of, I guess, attack, which is kind of my wheelhouse. I got to be honest, I'm not a scientist. I don't know much about sort of any of that, but, you know, my background, like I said, is sort of in subcultures and sort of cultural theory in general. That's sort of what I'm doing.
Well, we're coming up on the last break here. You're listening to MJ Benias on Radio Wasteland. We will be right back.
Joe's Web Geeks are the geeks your business has been looking for. Now businesses in Shasta County have a resource to make online advertising easy. With our Jumpstart service, you can get a website with pages built to be found in search, a Facebook page, listings in over 25 directories, and a lot more for $8.99. Let Joe's Web Geeks help you so that you can get back to doing what you do best. Visit joeswebgeeks.com or call 515-9851.
If you are running your own business, you already know that if there are 1,000 items on your to-do list, you really have 3,000 things to get done. Success in business is in the details. You need help. Let the smart professionals at Five Star Bank help you take care of those financial details. Yes, smart people doing good business. Life is 10% of what happens to us and 90% of how we react to it. Be positive. Those at the top of the mountain did not fall there. Visit us at Five Star Bank and let us show you how we specialize in emerging business and commercial real estate. Five Star Bank also specializes in hard work, working hard for those that believe that success is just on the other side of the next opportunity. Thomas Jefferson was a great believer in opportunity, for he found that the harder he worked, the more he had of it. Your time is as valuable as your success. So visit us at Five Star Bank, 358 Hartnell in Reading, or call Eric Woodstrom at 223-6652. Online at fivestarbank.com. Five Star Bank, professional, progressive, and personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey, Carl, I'm looking for a new place to eat. Do you have any suggestions?
Have you tried the Cedar Tree Restaurant in Palo Cedro?
No, I haven't yet. What's it like?
Hey, it's great. Locally owned and operated. The owner, Susan, does a superb job. Food's outstanding, and the entire dining experience is well worth that short trip to Palo Cedro.
Awesome. What are their hours?
7:30 to 2, Saturday through Tuesday. 7:30 to 8, Wednesday through Friday. You won't be sorry that you went out there.
Thanks. I'll go try it today.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You'll never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. You are listening to our guest, MJ Benias, and we're talking about, you know, the sociology behind UFOs. You know, I was thinking about what you were saying during the break, where, you know, there's the infighting and you have these people and those people. You know, I think one of the biggest injustices that's been done is probably by science fiction itself. And I'm going to say science fiction authors, you know, the ones who are really out there doing it, because if you think about it, so many ideas about aliens and about cover-ups and about what's possibly going on there have been put out into the media that if one of those ended up being true, it would be easily swatted down because people would be all, oh, it's just like that one movie. You know, and I really kind of feel like this inundation has really sort of diluted maybe some of the breadcrumbs like we were talking about.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, people walk into the UFO world, and I mean, I was like this too, right? I mean, I was influenced to be a sort of become a part of the UFO community because of the TV I watched, right? I mean, you know, the X-Files, the Outer Limits, you know, Star Trek. These were all things that kind of painted for me a picture of what you know, life looked like beyond sort of human life, And it definitely, like you said, right, you know, raises these questions of conspiracy and is the government hiding anything? I agree with you. And it's interesting because, like you say, if that does turn out to be sort of the reality of the situation, It's almost absurd. Like, it's really ridiculous that you know, somehow the X-Files got it right, or somehow, you know, the Outer Limits got it right.
Right. Well, maybe they did. And actually, in what you just said, you reminded me of what initially made me think this. And earlier we were talking about the aliens that come down and how come we don't have any literal nuts and bolts laying around for us to pick up. And, you know, that got me to thinking about Star Trek and the Prime Directive.
You know,
maybe something like this exists where they don't want to mess with a developing civilization.
Sure, but I mean, you know, as Star Trek has proven multiple times, the Prime Directive basically goes out the window every damn episode.
That's true.
And they, you know, are they?
And there are
the time,
a lot
right?
of space-time anomalies out there, apparently.
I guess, yeah, I mean, you know, I guess technically you could undo, you know, your Prime Directive mistake by flying around the sun or something really quickly. You're flying right. around the Earth and reversing time, right? Like Superman style.
Right.
I don't know. But, you know, and that's interesting, right? That's one of, that there's, you know, I'm sure your listeners have heard of the Fermi Paradox, which is sort of this idea of why, you know, if there's all these, you know, alien civilizations out there, how come, you know,
where
we haven't
everyone?
Made contact yet?
Yeah. Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
You know, one of them is sort of a Prime Directive style sort of answer to the Fermi Paradox. You know, the aliens are here, but they're not allowed to sort of openly engage with us for some reason, you know, whether it's we're not ready or whether we're simply sort of lab rats in a maze, or, you know, the UFOs are just kind of samples, right? And they're seeing how humans react to them, you know, and, you know, seeing how kind of our society deals with the UFO question. You know, this could potentially be, you know, ultimately what's going on. You never know, right? I don't necessarily know what is going on. Something strange is going on for sure, but I don't know. But you never know. There could sort of be something out there that's, you know, testing us in a sense. It's kind of monitoring, not necessarily for any sort of ill, bad reason, but you know, you never know. There could be hybrids. Who knows?
One of the most interesting versions of the Fermi Paradox explanations I saw was that it we don't get signals from alien civilizations because it could be dangerous to let it be known, hey, we're out here. You know, maybe there's drones flying around destroying civilizations or something like that. You know,
yeah, I think it was Stephen Hawking who kind of said that. I think Stephen Hawking recently kind of wrote an article or came out and said, you know, the last thing we should be doing is sending signals out into space, right? You know, he sort of said if he kind of posed a very philosophical question for a guy who says philosophy is dead, but he posed a very philosophical sort of question and said, you know, human nature and nature itself in general beyond humanity is sort of quite violent and the strong always dominate the weak and often destroy the weak, right, to sort of survive. And he said the last thing we should be doing is sending signals out to potentially sort of attract a much more intelligent, a much more powerful race to us, only because as history proves and sort of as nature proves, we will be destroyed by them, right? We would sort of be consumed by them in some way. And Stephen Hawking, I think, wrote this, like I said, maybe a year ago or so. But it's again, right, an interesting answer to the Fermi Paradox. Perhaps, you know, no one is sending signals out because they've realized that
terrified.
Anyone who has is now dead.
Yeah.
And those who sort of are insular and don't send signals out survive. You never know.
Right, right. You know, that's definitely interesting. I've also heard the theory that given the nature of inventions such as the atomic bomb, let's say, the likelihood of people becoming a spacefaring people with all the options along the way to destroy themselves, you know, makes it.
Yeah, I think it's referred often as the great filter, right? Mm. Or so it's like some sort of filter, right? That ultimately
it is
like technological. Yeah, technological advancement is what stops the species dead in its tracks, right? You invent something that destroys the species itself,
right?
Yeah.
Well,
this is literally philosophy, right? Like this is the thing, right? Like ultimately, this is what I enjoy doing. I kind of enjoy throwing these ideas around and potentially not necessarily coming up with answers, but kind of logically, rationally kind of exploring them to potentially see, you know, maybe this is what we're dealing with, and then tying that into sort of the UFO sightings and the UFO events and the UFO incidents that people are having, because you know. they really range. And that's kind of the odd thing, is no UFO events are sort of consistently kind of similar all the time, right? There's always weird variations and weird shifts and changes. And sometimes they're horribly traumatic, and sometimes they're like beautifully peaceful and wonderful and amazing. So like, what is going on, right? And that's kind of what I my blog tries to kind of deal with in a philosophical sense and in a cultural sense. How come some people have these horrible abduction experiences where they're like tested on and probed, or, you know, they see a UFO and they feel like incredible fear, versus some people who are sort of contacted by other beings who are like, you know, these majestic, sort of, you know, full of light and benevolence, and the UFO makes them feel, you know, like they are one with the universe. Like, why does this happen? How come some people, you know, get probed and some people don't? That is the big question.
That's the real question.
That is a great book title. You know, why do some people get probed? You know, and you know, that question. When I was a kid, you know, one of the things that definitely got me interested in this is I saw the movie Communion, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, they probe him and he's just all, you know, and it's like, you know, I watch this and I'm just all, there's a, like, it's like half of it's like some sort of, I don't know, tap dancer over there and the Star Wars cantina band and they're probing. You know, I'm all, what is going on with this guy, you know? But I really do enjoy, like you're saying, these conversations. Unfortunately, we have no choice but to look at it through a human filter, a philosophical human filter. Also, unfortunately, I've enjoyed talking to you, but we're coming up on the end of our show. Can you tell our audience a little bit more about where they can find out more about you?
Sure, yeah. I'm all over social media, so you can just find me if you just go look for MJ Benaiah. But my personal blog is www.terraobscura.net. I also write for the website Mysterious Universe, so you can find me there. You know, if you're interested in philosophy, if you're interested in critical theory and culture studies, and you're interested in UFOs, you know, there's no other place like Terra Obscura, that's for sure. I hope you look me up.
Yeah, I will definitely tell the audience that, you know, my wife is a sociologist, and normally this UFO stuff, you know, she entertains me. She makes, you know, she's all, oh, that's great, Chance. But when your background came up and how you were looking at it, it definitely piqued her interest. She thought it was very interesting. Well, MJ.
Oh, that's great.
I have really enjoyed having you on the show. The time just flew by. I really enjoyed it. I hope to have you on again in the future. You've been listening to MJ Benaiah on Radio Wasteland. Thanks for checking us out.
Place to sleep. Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm Keith Peters. The latest GOP effort to repeal and replace Obamacare was fatally wounded in the Senate Monday night when two more Republican senators announced their opposition to legislation strongly backed by President Donald Trump. The announcements from Senators Mike Lee of Utah and Jerry Moran of Kansas left the Republican Party's long-promised efforts to get rid of President Obama's health care legislation reeling. Next steps, if any, were not immediately clear. Lee and Moran both said they could not support Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's legislation in its current form. They joined GOP Senators Susan Collins of Maine and Rand Paul of Kentucky, both of whom announced their opposition right after McConnell released the